live better.
On downtown, what a fool believes. No wise man has the power to reason away. That, out of some reason, that seemed like an appropriate tune today, Bruce.
Works for me.
We are back on downtown 4:30 here on a Wednesday afternoon. Time for Sports Lit 101. Bruce here in studio, and joining us through the magic of Zoom, it's friend of the program, Ron Smith. Ron, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me. You guys are great.
Well, we always like having you on, and it's always great to see you, even if it's over long distance like this. We were talking originally about setting up a date, and Rich said maybe the day after the election would be a good time to have Ron on, because no matter how it turns out, he will have some wise poetry for us. So that's why I said in my note, do a sport poem, but we don't have to stay in sports. We can go wherever you feel like going today.
Well, I think sports poems can go anywhere, any way. So
I agree. What have you got for us?
Well, I thought I'd start with a Wallace Stevens poem, and you'll see why. This is Wallace Stevens' Anecdote of the Jar. I placed a jar in Tennessee, and round it was upon a hill. It made the slovenly wilderness surround that hill. The wilderness rose up to it and sprawled around no longer wild. The jar was round upon the ground and tall and of a port in air. It took dominion everywhere. The jar was gray and bare. It did not give of bird or bush like nothing else in Tennessee. Now,
that's great.
I love it.
Wallace Stevens is one of my favorite poets.
Me
one
too.
Of the great
I'm surprised
poets.
I didn't know that one. That's great.
That one's always tickled me. And every now and then I think I know what it means. But, you know, some years ago in Johnson City, Tennessee, I introduced what was mainly a crowd or a clutch, let's say, of Yankees. To a very southern game that nobody had ever heard of. Half rubber is what we call it down in Savannah, Georgia, and we claim to have invented it. It's only, I thought the thing was played all over the world because I knew of it ever since I could remember anything or watch grown-ups play in the backyard. You cut a solid rubber ball in half, and you get a broomstick or a mop handle, has to be wood. You cut off the business end, and now the whole thing is the business of a bat, and you don't need but three people to play. It's a fantastic game. And so I introduced it at Don Johnson's house in Johnson City, Tennessee. I'm sure you were there. And Don has a little apple orchard right next to the creek. And we played beside and a little bit into the apple orchard. And later I wrote this poem called Anecdote of the Half Rubber, and it's dedicated to Don Johnson. I cut a ball in Tennessee, and round it was upon the void. It made the boondock boskage circle round its paws, its neg. The wild scholars rose up to it and sprawled around no longer wild. The ball was domed upon the air and shapely, a glass half full. It took dominion in an orchard there. The ball half thwack, half whiff. It did not give a hooch or hoedown like nothing else in Tennessee.
Fantastic.
That's great.
Well, that was so much fun to write. And, you know, I really think a good poem is about, I insist on this, even though a lot of poets I think working out there today don't agree with me, should be about the world, about something in the physical world. Yeah. This, of course, is about, you know, orchards and half rubber balls and playing a game, et cetera. But all good poetry, I think, is about language, too. And it's about genre. You know, it's about psychology. But the balance tilts from poem to poem. This one is more about language and reference to the world of half rubber, which I really think is a game should be played all over the planet, and the world of Wallace Stevens. So that was fun to write.
Oh yeah, that was great.
Now that half rubber you had there, Ron, that looked like what folks here in the Northeast once upon a time referred to as a Spalding.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never heard that word. Huh.
I think because it was a Spalding ball.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. I know some people in the North have taken a hollow rubber ball and squeezed the air out of it, so it becomes a little bit like a half rubber, a little flappy kind of thing. And you can play stick ball with that too. But I really have been astounded to go, you know, other places, and nobody's ever heard of this game with a solid rubber ball anyway. But you wouldn't believe how hard it was to find a broom handle made of wood in Johnson City, Tennessee.
I have to go out in the orchard and whittle one.
Right. Want to hear a longer one?
Sure.
Yeah, we sure do.
This one might be more appropriate for the mood of the day. It's called Yankees.
Oh, I love this poem.
God's not men, those men. They ripped the sky roaring in my sixth grade Georgia dreams, floating on the base paths in the multitude's hazy love. The subdivision hated their guts, but they went on shelling the outfield seats in the Savannah Morning News. The word arrived with the milk, M&M boys strike again. And you could see them, sort of, on tiny fuzzy screens, Mantle, Maris, Scourin, Berra, Blanchard, even Howard and Lopez, black as headlines. Short Whitey Ford's tallest year. And what an infield, the Boyer with the perfect name, Cleet, and Richardson, Kubek. Two autumns later, when Jackie climbed out on the trunk to fetch a piece of the president's skull in Dallas, three classmates laughed right there in the cafetorium, the glee in their eyes. How does a childhood end? None of them laughed when Mantle, who smiled and drawled like a Southern boy, pulled up lame and fell behind. Go home, they said, and we did, most of us in perfect silence. I slogged the air one breathless mile under clouds glinting with Russian missiles. Maris couldn't do it in 154 games, some star that asterisk. He found his helmet full of hair. I watched a dozen guys with bricks on the rise next to the high school smash every near side pane on a passing bus full of little black kids. What jerked me out of a home run fantasy was the clicking racket of the windows like, yes, machine guns. They got them all up just in time. What is my place and who keeps me in it? Strong arm, fair field, slow legs, no hit, less than Cleet, who batted eighth. Only good one, a dead one. And they kept going down, those Yankees, on the airwaves, on the front page, and all their black mouthy brothers, Kennedys and Kings, soon in the ground, but somehow also high above us, immortal, deities of death, sucking the air out of the gasping Confederacy.
Wow.
I have always thought that is the best ending. That poem sticks the landing.
Thank you.
Better than just about anything, because even when I sensed the first time I heard you read it, where it was going, when it got there, I went, whoa.
I think that's good. You could sense it. Most art, I think, works just below the level of consciousness. And yeah, when you get there, you say, oh, I sort of knew that was coming.
Yeah.
I'm glad it hangs together.
It sure does.
Ron Smith with us here on Downtown Sports Lit 101. What else have you got for us, Ron?
Oh, I've been going through all my sports poems, and I may have told the story when I first read at Johnson City, Tennessee, at an SLA conference long, long ago. I was invited to read a couple of poems I had recently written, and I stood up in front of the crowd and said, I'm not really a sports poet. And I could see the reaction of the old timers in the front row. They're rolling their eyes thinking, oh God, another young poet who thinks he's too good for us. We have a lady we rent an apartment from in Rome. When she learned that I wrote sports poems, she said, really? Sports poems? they don't go together. Well, of course they do. Here's one dedicated to my friend Stan Tridiak. It's called A Different World. We had it easier, harder back then, when it was simpler, more complicated. No steroids, no pitching machines, no weight training, no trips to the Sawbones for a pissant concussion, no by God Gatorade. Hell, no water at practice. No cable TV, no distractions, internet, multitasking. No rules against the crackback block or spearing. No cortisone shots, batting gloves, closers, bean counters. Never had a coach who really knew hitting, fielding. A coach who played croquet with my parents, attended my boring Methodist church, knew my grades, all my friends. Parents said, play or not, your choice. And left me for dead in a frog-rich ditch until 6 p.m. supper, which I rose on time for every summer campless day, and before steaming which I bowed my head in sincere, simulated thanks.
That's great. You know, that poem reminded me of something that happened not long ago. My wife said to me, you know, when we were in college and we were up at Vermont Academy, which is the prep school I'd gone to, and somebody said, you were the best they ever saw at. I said, yeah. And she said, well, what was it? I said, well, they don't allow you to do it anymore. She said, what?
Right.
I said, you can't roll block anymore. You can't go for the shot with your shoulder pad down low and roll them up. And yeah. She said, well, why? And I said, because it's really dangerous and was probably a really good move. And I did. Saw many people who I did that to carted off the field, and I feel bad about it now. So, but it is amazing as poetry changes, sports poetry changes, the games have changed too. And I think that's why I love going to SLA and love reading Athlon, because people look at the game the way it is now, not just the way it was. It's not all about nostalgia, but about making those connections.
Right. And when I was asked to be the poetry editor of Athlon, I thought, oh God, I'm going to get thousands of nostalgia poems about how wonderful it was when I played baseball as a kid, or, you know, triumphalist poems about their winning teams. And in fact, about half the poems I get are really good.
Yeah.
And they're about being alive as a human being. They're not really about that narrow stuff.
Oh no, the poems in Athlon are always great. I almost always read them all at some point. On the air, you know, because I want people to know about it. We have time for another one, Rich?
Yeah, absolutely.
We got time for another one. That'd be great.
Let's see. Why don't I go to, this one's called Iron, I-R-O-N. And it's dedicated to my childhood body bashing buddy, blocking buddy, Royce Smith, and a weightlifting coach I know, Bob Blanton. Talk about old school.
Yeah.
Iron. At Howard's Gym on Victory Drive, I should stop there. When I first wrote this poem, I changed that to something else. I thought it sounded too symbolic. And then I realized, no, that's actually the name of the street. So let's go. So anyway, Iron. At Howard's Gym on Victory Drive, Royce and I gave our bodies to metal. After a day burning in ditches for 5 quarters an hour, we paid Howard to arm us in his stinking hole with iron flesh the scouts from Bama would buy. We writhed on the dip bar to rise, pumping for Howard's snake-sized veins, frowned before the bullhorns of the tricep grip to move a greasy cable an inch from our dripping noses, strapped our skulls to black plates that clanked between our knees, bowing and bowing to a future where our heads were stuck on posts of neck wider than our helmets. We learned to cross our legs casually for form, proud not to mention that the bench press bar was bending. Through the steaming summer nights, we wore our fiercest masks of meat, grunting our reps, making our sets. One more, you can do it. One more. until the lean limbs of boyhood were gone into the armor of the lineman's bulk. We would circle Joe's at the end of August, festoon car doors with our football beef, circle all the others who had spent July parked there with corn dogs and cherry cokes, their arms dwindling around the waists of girls. When one climbed out to slap our shoulders, we flexed hard under every touch.
Oh, man. It's so good. Wow. So good. Ron, it's always a pleasure to have you on, and we love doing it, and I appreciate that you come, and we'll do it again soon.
Yeah, let's get together in the flesh soon.
Yeah, let's work on that for sure. Always good to see you, my friend. Take care.
See you. Bye, Rich.
Thank you so much, Ron. That's Ron Smith. That was very healing.
Yes. Just
Ron's work, his voice, man, I feel better about things already. So thank you so much to Ron. We got to take a break. When we come back, Bruce talks with the head coach of the Black Bear hockey team. Big weekend coming up. Ben Barr up next on Downtown.
This is Steve.